Finance Committee meeting will come to order. Members present, Representative Phillips, Representative Sharp, Representative Larson, Representative Ulmer, Representative Barr, Representative Copeland, Representative Brown.
The family structure has changed so much.
First bill that we have on our agenda today is carryover from Friday, House Bill 78. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had a discussion at the end of the meeting about the questions that had come up. Although Representative Barnes is ill, I don't object to making the change that she was concerned about, and that is on page 3 at line 24 of the bill. It deals with or a child to whom an employee stands in loco parentis. This in loco parentis means that you're standing in as the parent temporarily. It's not a legal definition, and her suggestion, as I understand from speaking to her staff, is that that is too broad and that she would prefer that we remove that language. So, as I said, I don't feel strongly about that, and therefore, Mr. Chairman, I will move that we delete or a child to whom the employee stands in loco parentis on page 3, line 24, and that we insert an or before the last item in that line, so it would read or legal ward semicolon and.
Amendment has been moved. Is there objection? Without objection, the amendment's adopted.
So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the bill out of committee if the committee is agreeable.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Sharp.
Just one. Would the sponsor give any thought or over the last, over the weekend, basically, on section 3, on page 3, or item 3, starting with line 25, please. That would allow both parents to have leave if they were both employed, not by the same employer. I foresee that could be a stumbling block down the road.
Yes, you.
That's sort of overkill in some of our minds.
Representative Sharp, is your concern with the language in lines 26 through 28 on page 3, or is it some other place?
No, that's particularly where my concern is, and which apparently would allow both parents up to 18 weeks leave if they did not work for the same employer. I would prefer to see it that if both parents were employed, only one could have the paid leave for up to 18 weeks. But
well, Mr. Chairman, I think this is constructed to recognize that having them both out simultaneously is not permitted, but that there could be switching back and forth, that there could be one and then the other caring for a parent or child who is ill. And I guess I'd prefer to leave that provision. I guess.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any problem with that for a combined total of 18 weeks, but it would appear to give the possibility of 36 weeks.
You'd like to just drop simultaneously, so it would be the employer is not required to grant leave to both employees, meaning one or the other, but not
right,
both.
Right, right, because I could see a possibility of 36 weeks total involved here instead of just a combined total of 18. It's not a possibility the way it reads now.
The 18 goes to pregnancy, childbirth, or adoption.
Doesn't apply to this?
Right, there are different provisions. Yes, okay. So you would like to limit it to one or the other?
Yeah.
We did discuss this a little bit on Friday, and from a practical standpoint, the economics of it in almost any family would probably limit both taking off the 18 weeks anyhow.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree, but if they had enough sick leave before they get paid for paid sick leave during that time, then the economics wouldn't be a factor. So. To the employer. I mean, to the employee, it wouldn't be a factor.
Representative Ullman?
But just as a practical matter, though, let's imagine a circumstance in which the mother is an employee of the Department of Administration, the father is an employee of the Department of Environmental Conservation. They both have adequate leave. Okay, let's assume that circumstance. So all this bill does is say that that person can't be fired for taking that leave. And if, you know, I'm not sure that it isn't okay to allow the individual employee to make the decision that they'd rather take the leave to be home with the child than take the leave, you know, 2 weeks for a camping trip and, you know, 3 days for a trip to Florida or whatever. Seeing that we're only saying that the person can't be fired for it, I'm not troubled by it. If we were conveying an additional benefit somehow, it's very unlikely that they're both going to be working in the same office anyway. I don't know what the statistical occurrence of that is, but I would suspect it's extremely, very, very few people work in the same office. So how does it negatively affect the employer if they're in two different places, two different agencies, isn't reducing the ability of them to do the job, really, and they'd have the leave anyway?
I would interpret it that this, we're talking mainly to sick leave, not annual leave, where people go on vacation to faraway places. And sick leave is only used basically for personal sickness or, in this case, family sickness, which I have no problem with. But it seems that this promotes a lot of potential unproductivity for the state or any other public entity by allowing both parents to be off simultaneously if they don't work for the same outfit. It just seems like a little bit of overkill. If they staggered one off, a couple weeks and the other off, that's no problem. But it seems like we're allowing a doubling up here of unproductivity that has to be paid for and replacements hired or something. No. Somebody's got to cover the work.
Representative Brown.
Well, that's the purpose of the language there now, Mr. Chairman, is that to say the employer is not required to give it to both of them simultaneously.
Okay. He's talking, I think, about two separate employers,
like
right?
Municipality of Anchorage and the state of Alaska, right. Or school district.
Well, I guess I would just argue for maximum flexibility, recognize that people's circumstances of the people in their life that they are responsible for taking care of, it's, you know, we don't know what that's going to be, and it is a self-limiting thing, as has been said, because the practical economics of it are people probably won't be taking leave when it's unpaid unless it's absolutely necessary to do that, and this would allow a two-couple working family to stagger their responsibilities, and I think it's appropriate. As I said, in the states where this has been enacted already, studies are being done and ongoing research to determine how it's affecting business and how it's affecting government entities, and one of the things it's showing is most people don't even take all the paid leave that they're entitled to get, and that it's not showing up that people are abusing it.
Yeah, well, I raised four children with my wife, and I know there's a lot of opportunities, so I get a lot of practical experience there when you have to take off and what sacrifices you have to make. But it still seems that this section, C, would allow a double coverage if you didn't work for the same employer, and that bothers me some. So I'm not prepared to make an amendment at this point.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I want to ask a question of how we arrived at 18 weeks, because when I was going through the backup here, with I believe there's 17 jurisdictions that have some sort of family leave, and I did a quick and dirty tally, and it came out about 10 weeks on the average. So how do we get up to 18 weeks?
Representative Brown.
Thank you. The work done by early childhood experts shows that I believe it's 24 weeks is the recommended amount of time for a new child to bond with a parent, and that, so the initially when I introduced the legislation, the legislation pending in Congress at that time was 18. I think that 18 is a reasonable amount to have. It's less than the time ideally recommended for a parent to be with a new child. And I guess it's somewhat arbitrary as a number, but I think it's a reasonable number and would urge the committee to stick with that period of time.
Are there any other questions? There's Connie Sipes who would like to testify.
For the record, my name is Connie Sipes. I'm Executive Director of the Older Alaskans Commission. I'll be very brief. The Commission has voted to support this bill in concept. We know that there are collective bargaining concerns and concerns about exactly how much time, but part of our strong reason for coming forward to support the bill is to remind everyone that this is not just a maternity paternity leave bill. This is a family leave bill. This is a bill that will also encourage people of any age to take care of and support their own spouse or their parents should those parents need leave. Sometimes if an employee can get away for a month to see a family member through a heart attack, through a major surgery, or through a major convalescence, this makes all the difference between whether or not that elder, including our elders here in Alaska, can stay at home or ends up being institutionalized at a high public cost. And so we wanted to, as a commission, remind people that there's a lot of research being done, a lot of study about how much time employees spend giving care to their parents, not just to their children, and that this family leave bill is also important for the health and welfare of our elders and of the family caregivers who try to support them. And we're not arguing over all the various merits of some of the details of the bill, but are supporting the bill in concept, especially as it has now been changed through committee substitute work to be, as it were, an experiment with public employees first rather than with the entire private sector. We think that that's a good first step whereby we can give support to the bill and we can watch how it works out. So that's just our general testimony supported the bill in concept, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Brown?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we report from committee House Bill 78 as amended with individual recommendations and with the accompanying zero fiscal notes.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Phillips.
I want to state for the record that even though the fiscal notes say zero, we ought to be aware of the commentary on the second page of these fiscal notes, the unknown costs, as soon as I find it. You read the first page, although full implementation of this legislation results in costs throughout state government, these costs cannot be quantified accurately. On the second page, it says training costs would increase, substitutes would have to be hired, possible training and temporary replacement employees would have to take leave. They could not be expected to produce the same level as permanent journey level employees. And if leave is taken sporadically in short increments, it would be difficult to plan for an effective replacement of these absent employees. I just want that for the record.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Phillips. Any objections to moving the bill out of committee with individual recommendations? Hearing none. Okay. The next bill that we're going to be hearing is House Bill 187, Representative Kubina.
Dark, huh?
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Taking a real chance here.
You can tell the darts at the back of the horses and make them run faster.
Madam Chairman, House Bill 187 is a result of some action that was taken in Valdez over a year ago. I believe it was the Elks Club every year did a dart tournament. And the proceeds, people that came in the tournament paid money, and the proceeds all went to scholarships and whatnot. And they were refused, and it was actually the ABC board that came in because there was liquor there, and they said that there was no specific provision in the law under charitable gaming to allow for dart tournaments, pool tabs and others there are. So we introduced this bill last year in discussions with Mr. Hansen on charitable gaming department. They have actually broadened it or supported broadening it to other games of skill like archery. I guess bowling would be one, you know, other things that people would do to see who had the best skill at something. Axe throwing could be one, maybe. thinking of a past presidential candidate that did that. Anyways, this bill lingered last year because there's an overall debate on the gaming issue. And as we all know, the last night of the session, no gaming bill went through. So I have asked that it be brought back up. When it passed out of the Judiciary Committee last year, there were all no recs, but I believe that was because, not that anybody was against it, but because this bill was incorporated in a larger bill. I just don't know what's going to happen with the larger issues of gaming this year, and so I've asked that the bill be heard and passed on to the floor. There is zero fiscal notes, and there's also a letter of support from the Department of Commerce.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Kubina? Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It seems that unless we expect that this is going to be used for a vehicle or something, the title is pretty broad. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I believe Representative Navarre has some language up there to tighten that title. As far as I'm concerned, you make the bill the title.
Yes.
We have John Hansen, who's going to be talking about the title, tightening of the title.
Good afternoon, I'm John Hansen with the Department of Commerce. I don't have a specific recommendation as far as language for the title, but that was going to be one of the suggestions that I had for the committee. I did want to also let the committee know that this issue in regards to expanding these contests of skill to allow for dart contests were addressed in some regulations that I got adopted on February 5th of this year. And those were part of a regulation packet that were finally adopted, as I said. And in those regulations, it allowed us to expand the definition of marksmanship to include other events such as dart tournaments. But we have the prior to 59 restrictions still there. And it's about as far as I can go as in regards to regulations to provide for this activity. So there is some relief out there whether or not this bill passes, but it would only be in regards to activities that were conducted prior to 59. So there still is a need for this bill, and the department supports its passage. In regards to those regulations, like I said, they were adopted on February 5th. We're hoping that they maintain to be in effect, although on last Tuesday we were served with a lawsuit, so we're not sure if they're going to maintain their status. So in regards to the title, I think you might want to just put the meat of the intent in there, which is to expand the contest definition of contest of skill to provide for dart tournaments, bowling tournaments, and billiards, period. If you have too broad of a title, it could end up being something that you didn't intend for it to be. Is there any questions?
Representative Brown.
Thank you. I wanted to ask about the fiscal note and the economic impact of just bringing in those three. Wouldn't we expect that would generate some level of activity?
I think
occupational licensing.
Yeah, I imagine we'll get an increase in activity in regards to licensing that activity. Most of these things are happening anyway. or have in the past.
Without being licensed and approved by the
right.
state.
Right, and because we've taken a very proactive role in enforcing gaming laws, we go into a bar that sells pull tabs, and if there isn't a permit on the wall, there's a problem. But then there's this other thing occurring in the corner where there's the three elements of gambling, which is consideration, element of skill or chance, and prize. And unfortunately, we've had to also address those issues. I don't believe it would be a tremendous increase in our staff. I don't think all of a sudden there's going to be an explosion of dart tournaments or bowling tournaments, but it'll create some more paperwork probably. Generally speaking, though, we're in those premises anyway.
What's the cost to an organization to get a license or authority to do a bowling tournament or one of these newly authorized tournaments?
There wouldn't be a specific fee for that function, but it would have to be done under the auspices of a gaming permit. So an organization would first have to qualify and pay a permit fee, which varies from $20 to $100. And then once it has their permit fee, this would be another activity that they could conduct. Currently, they're limited to about 11 activities, pull tabs, bingo, raffles, contests of skill, dog mushing, snowmobile, this type of thing. So this would be one more activity that we could license. Just as a kind of a coincidence, I just received a letter from an organization, the first organization that actually read our regulations and realized that we can now expand our definition of marksmanship under 12AAC34980. The Golden Heart Dart Association just wrote us a letter. I actually talked to their president today, Patrick McFadden, and he read the regulations and said, it sounds like we can do this if we can prove that we did this prior to statehood. And he actually has provided me with some documentation that they used to throw darts in the Army barracks in 1945. So, sounds good to me. I think they're going to be able to get a permit.
Up at Fort Lead.
Yeah. So, we have had some progress in this regard, but again, it's going to be limited to what was conducted prior to statehood.
Darts were... The first dart tournament I remember was in Tommy's Elbow Room in Fairbanks about 1954 or 5.
Right. So I think that that's one. Oh, did you? I think that that's one that we can pretty well recognize has been around for a while, and we should be able to take care of that. It would be nice to have it done through statutes, though, and I really think that's the proper way to go.
Well, Madam Chairman?
Yes, Representative Boyer.
Then I would propose at minimum that we expand or limit the title. And if I can just conceptually throw something out for the record, at a minimum, I think we need to change the title to say that we're expanding the definition of contract or contest of skill to include, and then just run through the marksmanship and bowling and billiards. And also, do you think, John, that we need to specifically mentioned rifle, pistol, or archery?
Well, those actually are in there now.
Right.
I have some other kind of neat things in my transition letter that we talked about. Let me see if I can find them, that people like to do. We included in our regulations, and by the way, I brought copies of these. Members of the committee would like to see this. I said bowling tournaments, dart tournaments, golf tournaments, and hoop shoot tournaments. But we also said, or other events approved by the department. So, but it would still be restricted to what was done prior to 59. Now, I don't know if there were bowling alleys here in 59.
Oh, yeah. There were.
Were there?
Oh, yes.
And there were tournaments?
Yeah, there were tournaments.
So, I mean, if someone could provide us with that.
Here. These are the actual regs. Those are the answers. For a bowling alley, you can actually
do that. Can't wait to
have I should tell you, but every 4th of July, there's a bunch of guys in Fairbanks who haul black powder cannons up to the...
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I just want to make sure we have the string of
right.
all the things we want.
Right.
So does the string still have to though include rifle, pistol, archery?
It's
marksmanship. No, because that's
marksmanship.
That's currently provided for in law.
Yeah.
So the title doesn't have to be.
So you're only dealing with billiards?
If you say expanding, you're entitled to include.
Because marksmanship
Marksmanship is defined by those events that you just mentioned.
Yeah. Right. That's what I say, that's new law.
No, that's current law. That current regulation, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's so I think you need to state it. I mean, otherwise, this is new law for you.
Let's say marksmanship is defined by the department.
Correct. We've defined marksmanship, and now I've gone and further defined it to those stated things, the rifle, pitchery.
What's the AAC? Marksmanship is defined under?
Under our new regulation, it's defined under 12 AAC 34980.
All right. Why don't we do this to save some time?
Yeah.
Just pass it conceptually, have staff look at it.
Absolutely.
Pass the bill out. We take a look at the whatever the legal comes up with tomorrow, and
I just want to make sure we have the right string. The right string is these four things plus a reference to your to your code or regulations.
Yeah, and I want to make it perfectly clear that you understand our regulation now says marksmanship includes contests of skill based on rifle, pistol, or archery matches, and other similar events approved by the department. It used to say archery matches, period. So we expanded it.
And I only mean by reference here for the string, not for the actual. You obviously can't put these regulations in statute debates by reference anyway, but you can by string. So that's the only reason the reference is there, so that the drafter will look at the regs and then add these other four things: bowling matches, dart matches, golf tournaments, and
billiards.
Hoop shot.
Right, that's the basketball.
Right.
Yeah. He said billiards.
People
too.
Like to do that.
He said billiards too, didn't you?
Yes.
And billiards.
Cool.
Okay. So I think
you make that longer than that.
How's that then? Is it conceptual amendment?
Question on the time.
Yes, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do you also need to pick up the change in Section 1 in the title? Because it seems like the title, as you just stated it, only addresses Section 2. And maybe if we want, since we're going to narrow it, it's now very broad. It's just an act relating to that perhaps we should add a semicolon and providing that contest of skill that existed before January 1, 59 or authorized. Is that the effect of Section 1?
Section 1 is now recognizing one more activity to be exempted from being required to be conducted prior to 59. So by including contests of skill as one of the exemptions, which this does, it doesn't have to be done prior to 59. So you really, you've done it. But in Section 2 now, by including in the definition of contests and skill to include archery or dart matches and other events, bowling and billiards, you've covered it already in Section 1. So it won't have to be done like prior to 59. This law is going to allow new events, not just what was happening in 59.
So is the change in Section 1 substantive?
Yeah, it does what...
And therefore, shouldn't it be in the title?
Yes. I think that would be a good step to narrowing the title, too, to just say, an act relating the definition, or expanding the definition of contest of skill to provide for marksmanship, or a new definition of marksmanship, period, or something like that.
Well,
I'm sure somebody in legal can come
the drafters,
up with.
I think,
we will.
They can
yeah,
figure it out.
Let them figure it out.
We want
titles, or
we should give them some indication of what all we want included. Though, and you mentioned like hoop shoot, golf, darts, bowling, and billiards. Should they all be mentioned, or
yes.
It depends if you want to make it restrictive. If you say specifically what you want in the title, and don't allow for other events approved, I won't do it anymore through our regs. Okay? But if you leave the title a little open there where we can have some expansion through regulatory power approval, we'll do it that way. It's what you want to do. If you want to leave that or other approved events by the department, then you'd want to have a little bit more in the title. If you want to say, these are it.
Okay, thank you very much,
okay.
Mr. Hansen.
Good.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Representative Larson.
May I ask the sponsor how he feels the title should be written, a little loose or tight?
Tight.
Madam Chairman, Representative Larson, I'm amenable to however the committee wants to go, tighten it up. So I just would not like it to get caught up in the overall battle again also. So
yeah.
Make it tight. The tighter you get. I'm not sure. I understand why it's so important, to be honest with you. I mean, we're only talking about charitable gaming, so yeah. It's not real. It doesn't deal with all these people that are in the bars gambling among themselves. I guess that's probably technically still illegal.
Oh, yeah.
But I would more than happy to tighten up as much as you want.
Thank you very much. Representative Boyer.
I would move the conceptual amendment.
Okay, there is a conceptual amendment to amending the title to tighten it. Okay. Any objections?
Just for a question then. The title then is going to conform with Section 2, and it will relate to billiards, bowling, darts, right. Golf, hoop shoots, period. It won't have any open-ended.
That's correct.
Okay, Representative Phillips.
Just for my personal education, hoops, I mean, I can't recall. Can you give me an example?
Yeah. For instance, the State Fair, they have a basketball hoop there, pay 50 cents.
That's illegal now.
That's correct. But it would only be legal if it was for the charitable.
Right, yeah. Right.
Okay, are there any objections? Representative Ulmer.
It's not an objection, it's a new issue.
Okay.
Are we done with that one?
There is a motion, a conceptual motion.
I just thought I asked.
To tighten the title?
No objection.
Okay, no objection. Okay, Representative Ulmer.
This is of a technical nature, but it is important. The bill that was before us was drafted prior to the legislature last year amending subsection B, and if I just went to the supplement for the statutes, and I am correct in that this draft does not reflect what we did. After the word, let's see if I can get this right here. After the word Salmon Classics on line 5 of the bill, current law includes another permitted activity, which is King Salmon Classics, which we did last year. So this bill needs to be amended to reflect what is currently in the statutes, or we may confuse someone. When you do a CS, you need to tell the drafter to add the King Salmon Classics before contests of skill.
Probably would have been drafted up with your bias.
Probably, but just in case not.
Just move it as an amendment.
So moved.
There's a motion to move to the amendment to include, okay, to conform to the present statutes. Okay. Any objections to the motion?
Is there a difference between the salmon and the king salmon?
Mm-hmm. There is.
Wait.
No objections. No. Motion carries.
Who runs it?
Oh.
Madam Chairman?
Representative Boyd.
I would propose that we pass out the new finance CS for House Bill number 187 with individual recommendations and the accompanying zero percent
loss. Okay, there's a motion on the floor. Any objections to the motion to move the bill out of committee with individual recommendations as amended?
Madam Chairman, could we also have the committee staff bicycle around the just copy so we see what the final title looks like?
Do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Any objections? Hearing none, motion carried.
Thank you very much. Next bill in your office.
Next bill we'll take up is House Bill 418.
No, 203. 203
is not ready.
Oh. No, but can I say?
Sure.
Later.
House Bill 203.
Thank you. This is in a subcommittee, and I've been working on a new draft. I do have a new draft. I'd be happy to share it with anyone who's interested in it, and we're just now waiting on the fiscal note and to get members' comments, and I hope to have it ready later this week.
We'll hold it over until Wednesday.
House Bill 418, Representative McClain.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 418. The purpose of the bill is to require employers to provide employees who are minors with a break after 6 or more hours. And legal services has informed us that Alaska statutes on child labor laws make no reference to required breaks or lengths of shifts for children, nor are there any federal laws relating to breaks for children. And House Bill 418 would require that people under the age of 18 who are scheduled to work for 6 hours or more are entitled to a break of at least 30 minutes during the course of the work shift. The bill also requires that the break must occur after the first hour and a half of work and before the beginning of the last hour of work. And further, the bill also addresses the situation where an individual may end up working more hours than originally planned and specifies that a person under the age of 18 who works for 5 consecutive hours without a break is entitled to a break of at least 30 minutes before continuing to work. And there's a sponsor substitute which was introduced to add Section D, and this is at the request of the Department of Labor, and it would entitle the employee to receive compensation if they did not get a lunch break, and also gives the Department of Labor the authority to monitor employers through their usual wage and hour audit procedures. And there is a zero fiscal note, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Sure. Just on that last point, if the employer gives the minor a half-hour lunch break, that is uncompensated. But if they give any other break other than a lunch break, then that would have to be compensated for? Is that what I understood you to say?
We have the person from Department of Labor here to speak to that.
I believe it's uncompensated unless they don't get it, and then it creates a claim against that half hour of whatever the minimum wage was.
Good afternoon. My name is Snowball Lockaby Smith, Representative Carson. What was your question again?
Well, I guess whether the break is compensated or uncompensated, or under what conditions would it be compensated for?
It would be compensated if the break was not given. That would be the in the form of a
penalty. In other words, they work 6 hours, they'd actually get paid for 6.5, then is that correct?
They would get paid for 6 hours at their regular rate of pay, and they would be compensated a half hour at minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Would that require, though, that they file?
No.
For it?
No, under the authority given to the Department of Labor in the Wage and Hour Act, the department can, on its own motion, go in and conduct investigations of minimum wage and overtime violations, and this, I believe, would fit into the minimum wage violation category.
Why would you, if you're making $6 an hour sliming fish, why would you kick it back to minimum wage for that half hour? What's the public policy call there?
I don't have an answer for you. I can get one for you tomorrow.
You want to make sure that it gets paid. I understand that, but why wouldn't you make it at whatever? This is a cheap way out for an employer. You work your kids longer hours, and you only have to pay them $4.35 for that half hour instead of $6, which is what they're getting paid, or half that amount.
I will get the answer to that question. I don't have that.
I'm also interested in the issue that was raised, in Fairbanks, with regard to an underage a child not being able to work in the movie industry, mm-hmm. and whether or not that issue is appropriate to be dealt with on this piece of legislation.
I believe that there's another piece of legislation pending at this time.
Right, I understand that, but is the issue germane and pertinent to this bill? If it is, sometimes these things can be discussed among sponsors, and it may be appropriate tag it here, and I don't know the answer to that, so I'm just asking a question.
I'm sorry, I don't have the answer to that question either. I would like to read the Department of Labor's position on this bill at this time. The Department of Labor supports this legislation. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 418 amends the state's child labor laws concerning the employment of children under 18. The bill would require employers to provide minor employees with a 30-minute unpaid break from work if the minor is scheduled to work 6 or more consecutive hours. In addition, the bill would require employers to provide minor employees with a 30-minute unpaid break if the minor works but may not have been scheduled to work more than 5 consecutive hours. If the employer fails to provide the break, the bill would create a minimum wage liability which would allow the miner to file a claim for wages for the break time not provided. The department would pursue enforcement in the same manner as a wage claim is processed. Again, this legislation is not expected to require additional program support, and the zero fiscal note has been submitted to this committee.
I'm real curious about the minimum wage liability. I worked as a miner in fish slamming operation for 3 years before my 17th birthday, and we often worked 12-hour shifts and often worked more than 6 hours at a time without pay. And it's been a few years ago, but it was the practice then to pay you for a half-hour lunch, or and then in most cases to provide you with a lunch as well. So it was the way they approached it then, and so I'd hate to see us kind of set it back a little bit, and that's why I'm interested, because the minimum wage is not what we were getting paid then. If we worked through our lunch, we got paid for half hour at regular scale, and I understand you want to be able to have an enforcement tool, but I don't know that that's a problem. So that's my interest.
Let me offer this. The department cannot go in on its own motion and investigate wages that are due by contract unless the department has an assignment from a claimant. The only way that we can go in on our own and enforce is if we have an assignment for contractually agreed upon wages, or if it's a violation of the Wage and Hour Act. If it's not a violation of the Wage and Hour Act, then we can't. Our hands are tied unless somebody comes to us and files a claim, in other words. So that may be the purpose. I'm not saying that is the purpose, but that could be the purpose for that disparity there. And I understand that that's a good question.
Any other questions? Okay, we're going to hold the bill until tomorrow so that we can work on amendment for that section.
Well, Mr. Chairman, could we also request that the sponsor inquire of the sponsor of the other legislation whether or not there's a problem with tagging it here? It's apparently that issue also is kind of a cleaning up of an inadvertence, literally a historical inadvertence in our statutes. And in a 120-day environment, we don't have time for freestanding bills, all of them to get passed. And so I'm becoming Max Gruenberg, I guess, and we ought to look for opportunities to amend things. And
sure way not to get things done.
In this case, I think that other issue is without controversy and should fly. And if this bill is moving, I'd like to have us look at that. It's a part of legislation.
What
about
the bills out of committee?
Perhaps the department can speak to the problem created by minors working in the film industry.
Right now, no one under the age of 14 can work in Alaska unless they're delivering newspapers, they're working in and about private homes as a domestic helper. They come in and do housework or yard work with hand tools, that kind of thing. That's the only kind of work that kids under 14 can do. The incident in Fairbanks recently...
had to do with the film industry.
It had to do with... The television show 911 Rescue. I'm not certain of the title of the show, but they reenacted a scene or an event that occurred about 2 months ago where a five-year-old child was on a runaway dog sled and ran. The dogs ran for 7 miles before someone could catch up with them. So
they can be photographed working as a domestic.
Oh, you're saying the reenactment? Are you saying the reenactment of this 5-year-old child is a violation of child labor laws?
Yes, that's.
They can't be paid for the book.
So they bring an import.
Can I ask a general question? Yeah. If you hire someone under the age of 14 to mow your lawn with a power lawnmower, is that against the law?
No.
Yeah.
Typically.
Why, you got some hiring?
Renters, yes, isn't it?
Well, kids under 14, they can be independent contractors. They can go door to door to each one of you and say, can I mow your lawn?
Yeah. Do they have to use your own lawnmower then? Or?
They have to provide all their own stuff. They have to
but
be
if they use your lawnmower.
Then well, there's more to it than that.
Well, can you give me an answer then?
I would say that by and large, they are independent contractors. There's a six-point test that we use, and I don't have it with me. It's a matter of control. It's a matter of who owns the equipment. Do they provide their own helpers? And
what I'm saying, if you hire a 13-year-old and you say, there's my lawnmower, go mow my grass. Is that against the law?
They're taking a chance to screw up your lawnmower, too.
I would like to defer the answer to that question.
I would appreciate the answer, though, sometime
we'll
between now
you.
And May.
I'll get it for
thank
you.
Thank you.
Why? You're grassing the grown May? Are there all that snow?
Are there further questions?
I want it mowed when I get a phone.
It's great.
How about if he's using a vacuum cleaner?
On the fence?
No.
I thought it was any power.
Household
employment is okay.
Yeah.
But... So what's the difference between lawn mowing and vacuuming?
Certainly a vacuum cleaner is power-driven equipment.
Let us know.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
You want any?
I think I'm done.
Thank you.
Someone's working. For 6 hours.
Or more.
And they have two 15-minute breaks, that didn't count, right?
30 minutes.
That's 30 minutes. Of at least 30 minutes.
Not sure we're doing any favors. But okay, anything else to come before the committee today? Not meeting adjourned.